You're listening to World Cafe. I'm Raina Duris. Pete Townsend. Not only is he the major creative force behind The Who, he's also released several of his own solo records. He prompted the first known use of the term rock opera when he wrote The Who's Tommy. He's even credited with being the first person to smash a guitar on stage. But one thing Pete Townsend had never done until now is write a novel. Earlier this month, he published his first ever novel, The Age of Anxiety. There are plans to turn it into an opera art installation, which he says will be his last major solo work. He's also releasing a new album with The Who in December called Who. You'll hear some of the new music from that album, and we'll talk about his realization 2 years ago that his famed rock opera Tommy was actually about him. And you'll hear about his new book. I asked Pete how much of that new book is about him.
I really wanted to write a proper fiction novel at last. You know, I've done most of my stuff as a songwriter, and I was warned by my editor that if I went too far into general fiction, people would, in a sense, lose me. I am a celebrity. I am known for what I do in a rock band. So with this book, too, I've tried to stay in familiar territory so that people I'm not taunting people to try and find me in this. If they try and find me in this, they might not. But I don't think I'm really there.
Now, there are moments in it that get a little salacious. Was there anything in there that, you know, knowing that people know who you are, where you're maybe uncomfortable writing it? Was there anything you had reservations about putting in the book?
No. The salacious bits, if you like, are really about they're there to propel the narrative. The narrator is the godfather of a young musician. He's not a musician himself. He's actually an art dealer. And I wanted to have a reason for him to write the book. I wanted him to also be an isolated, lonely voice, somebody who had married, lost his wife, was often in the company of younger people, younger men and younger women. And why would I do that? Well, it's where I am. I'm in the music business. I'm 70, coming up to 75 years old, and I'm surrounded by young people. So I'm familiar with that world. I'm familiar with the machinery of it. I'm a man in my 70s who occasionally gets asked on a date by a younger woman. So I'm kind of used to that. And I'm married now again. So I had my little burst of freedom. I'm familiar with the language in a sense, but the reason I wanted to bring this, the narrator is accused by somebody that's close to him of the possibility that he has raped somebody. And I started this book in 2008, before the Me Too movement kicked off. He's not a celebrity himself, he's just an art dealer. And whether or not this accusation is true or not is kind of left to the reader to decide. So in a sense, it does jack into the current Me Too movement, but it was never meant to. I didn't mean it to. I don't expect to be accused of anything like that myself.
The narrator is sort of given to be a bit of an unreliable narrator by the end. You kind of aren't sure if he knows, if he's being completely honest. It's an interesting way to finish that book that way in this time.
I think that's right. I think also with the way that the narrator tells the story, he's really trying to tell the story of a very wholesome couple of people. They are the young musician who is his godson, who has a kind of a psychic connection with his audience, which allows him to, in a sense, jack into their anxieties. And it disables his work. So he leaves his career behind and meets a young woman who is an equestrian. She runs a stud. And these two stories were loosely based on people that I know. Hopefully, I suppose what I was doing was trying to create an interwoven, flowing plot that had more than one strand.
Right.
So, and this is my first novel, and it's the first time I've tried to properly plot something, and I must quickly say that in music, we try not to do that. We try not to plot things. We try not to create twists. We try not to close the story for you. So if you hear a song, for example, by somebody that you love, and you listen to the lyric, what good music, particularly popular music, does, less so with opera, but what good popular music does is allow you as the listener to draw the conclusion and, if you like, you know, write the ending.
Right, of course. Well, I mean, that plotting out, you have done operas or rock operas before, concept albums, so there is sort of a parallel there. My name is Raina Duras. You are listening to The World Cafe. I'm joined by Pete Townsend of The Who. We're talking about The Who's new album called Who, and right now about Pete's new novel, Age of Anxiety. And I did notice as I was going through this book that there are some parallels between the book, Age of Anxiety, and, say, Tommy, your rock opera. Not only Walter, the godson that you were talking about, who's in this band, who has this connection to his audience, he experiences auditory hallucinations, right?
I think that's a good way of putting it.
Thank
you.
Sure. Yeah, no problem. Tommy could sense music. Music has this great power.
Sickness will surely take the mind, where minds can't usually go. Come on the amazing journey and learn all you should know.
Plus, in this story, in both stories, there's a man who goes missing and returns. Both stories even involve a sort of savior figure who uses a hang glider, which is a pretty specific detail.
You feel me coming, a new vibration.
So I was wondering, you know, how does this novel connect to Tommy? Does it? And were you doing that on purpose?
I was doing it on purpose, yeah. I used a couple of connections. The hang glider, the scene at the opening of the film, is like the end of Ken Russell's film of Tommy. And I wanted to create a visual clue to the fact that the old rock star is somebody like a mixture of artists from the late 60s, early 70s, the what we call progressive rock artists. I'm less conscious, I have to say, of the connection that you've just made about my young hero, Walter, being similar to Tommy in any way. When I wrote Tommy, I had no idea that I was revealing, exposing, delving, diving, mining my own childhood. I had no idea. In fact, even when Tommy was on Broadway in 93 and I worked on the book for the Broadway show with Des McAnuff, we talked for weeks, and then I came to New York and I spent 2 years here putting up various incarnations of that show. Interview after interview after interview, going as deep as I possibly could, I never for a minute had the sense that this was really, truly about me. And it was really only recently, about 2 years ago, that I was performing. Roger Daltrey had been touring and performing the entirety of Tommy, and we'd never performed the entirety of it. And as I rehearsed it, I realized, oh God, this is me. This is absolutely me in every respect. And what I'd actually done is unconsciously delivered this piece, which reflected so accurately on my own childhood, my difficulties. My childhood's interesting because it wasn't entirely dark. It was very, very wonderful from the age of nothing to 4.5. Then from 4.5 to just before I turned 7, absolutely disgustingly horrible. And then after that, not bad. And then having been kind of slightly screwed up as an infant, I mishandled my adolescence and was very, very subject to, particularly to bullying and to a degree of abandonment. And so all of those things emerge in Tommy. And I suppose the thing that really always shocked me about Tommy was its success. When you think that so many people, somebody said to me the other day, no, Pete, I love it because it's great music, and I'm happy to hear that. But I think a lot of people do really feel that it reflects the status quo of the post-war boomer generation's issues. You know, there's one other thing that I should mention. When I was a little boy, when I was about 8, I referred to it just now as when I got back after my dark period with my parents. Things were just okay. I think that's the best way to describe it. What was wonderful was that I used to hear music, and I used to hear it in the
clouds. In your head, you mean?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. But I used to hear music in music, so I would hear music in sound. So, for example, I would hear, you know, an outboard motor on a boat, and I would hear music in that. I would hear the rumble of an old-fashioned steam train, and I would turn it into music. So as a composer, that has helped me greatly, because I can work with fairly simple sounds and then elaborate according to what it is that I hear in my own head.
I'm speaking to Pete Townsend of The Who, talking about his new novel, Age of Anxiety, and The Who's new album, Who, on World Cafe. I'm Raina Duras. We're going to listen to a little bit of your music right now. We're going to hear a bit from Tommy. This is See Me, Feel Me from The Who on World Cafe.
See me, feel me, touch me, feel me. Listening to you, I get the music. Gazing at you, I get the heat. Following you, I climb the mountain. I get excitement at your feet.
See Me, Feel Me, that song from Tommy by The Who. I'm talking to The Who's Pete Townsend on World Cafe. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about the idea of a rock opera. Tommy was the first thing ever really called a rock opera. It's what put the term rock opera into our lexicon. It was very influential. People call The Who influential all the time. You did a lot of things first. But on your new album, the song All This Music Must Fade, you've said it's dedicated to all musicians who've ever been accused of ripping someone off. Could you, you know, talk about that a little bit?
Well, I don't know. I don't know whether I can really talk about it. I mean, a song is a song.
It's,
you know, it has a function and it's fairly simple.
Have you ever felt like
more interesting, in a sense, is to talk about, you know, what has happened to music in the pop era, which is that it has, since the 60s, it's become more and more and more basic, more and more simple. Music is what is often borrowed, what is often stolen, what is often echoed, what is often repeated, particularly in our business. So it's kind of absurd for somebody to pop out of the woodwork and accuse, let's say, somebody like Ed Sheeran, whose music is not exactly Schoenberg, of ripping off some earlier song. It just happens. You know, we only have this limited language to deal with. And I remember my publisher trying to get me to sue somebody who'd used the chords da 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 da, which is from Barbara O'Reilly. And I said, this is madness. And in the end, I refused to let my publisher sue that artist. And my publisher came back to me and said, Pete, we're just trying to preserve your legacy. What a crock, really. What a crock. You know, it's just madness. And I think, you know, so the song is about that. It's about, hey, let's throw the cards in the air and stop trying to count the pennies. And, of course, in some cases, with poor old Katy Perry, it turned into millions of dollars. So it's just craziness, I think. So the song is about the absurdity of I don't know, music publishing.
Well, I think it was Mozart who said while he was alive that all combinations of notes had already been used, and that was, you know, hundreds of years ago. So
exactly, exactly. Yeah.
Let's take a listen to that song from The Who's new album, Who, the song we were just talking about, called "All This Music Must Fade," on the World Cafe.
I don't care.
All This Music Must Fade, from The Who's first album in 13 years, titled Who. I'm Raina Duris, joined by The Who's Pete Townsend. So, All This Music Must Fade, it's on your new album, and there are a few points on this new album where you sort of indicate that you've, you know, grown up, you're looking back on younger generations of artists. In one song, you refer to snotty young kids, but you're the same person, Pete, who wrote "I Hope I Die Before I Get Old," famously, in My Generation. So 54 years down the line from that song, what do you think you now would say to you back then? What would you say to the version of Pete Townsend who wrote My Generation?
You're a snotty young kid.
What do you think he would say to you?
I've got no idea. I really got no idea. I think that lyric came from the hip, so I really don't know, you know, I certainly don't, it was greatly misinterpreted, I think. I don't think it was about, I would rather kill myself than get old. I think it was about, I would rather kill myself and get old and end up like you. I don't mean you, Raina, I mean
the
generation that was around at the time. It was an expression of, let me try to elaborate a little bit if I've got the time. You know,
sure.
The post-war situation in the UK was pretty bleak. So I was born in 45. My friends were 44, 46, 47. So those kind of years. They were immediately after the war. There was a lot of austerity and difficulty, and people were getting used to post-traumatic stress, breakdown of relationships, trying to rebuild. It was a bleak time. And the establishment became stronger and stronger and stronger based on a tradition of, you know, one of our prime ministers said, "You've never had it so good," Macmillan, in the early 60s. The idea that just because we were alive and kicking, well, that was enough. Well, it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough for us because we weren't included. We weren't allowed to be a part of the valedictory generation that had won the war, that had fought and lost and struggled and were told we had to be happy and shut up. And we were very grateful, of course, for the peace that we lived in. But we also lived, as, you know, in the cliche, we lived under the shadow of the bomb. And we weren't grateful for that. So My Generation is a song about drawing a line, just saying from here on in, you don't count. Nothing that you say counts. In other words, the previous establishment. You know, and in my life, wow, you know, that really... I did it. So what, you know, it's only now in the last 10 years that I've actually started to read history, learn from it. You know, I really did draw a line and shut down everything that might have come from a previous establishment. So I lived in fairly rarefied air, but it seemed to serve my cause, which was to serve the audience of mainly young men that were in a similar age group to me.
Just because we get around, talking about my generation. Things they do look awful, talking about my generation. I hope I die before I get old, talking about my generation. My generation, take my generation, baby. Why don't you all fade away?
I'm I'm Raina Duris, joined by The Who's Pete Townsend. Now you say that thing about living under the shadow of the bomb. And going back to your new novel, Age of Anxiety, there is one of the things that Walter, one of the main characters, the godson in the book, can do is sort of hear people's anxieties. And there's one page, and I don't think I'm spoiling anything by sort of reading just a little bit, but he kind of writes down a bunch of these anxieties he's heard, basically thoughts from other people. And he says he hears people thinking, I worry about the planet, this strange weather, or robots will take over the world, I know they will. Hurricanes, when will this wind cease? All these little pieces of anxiety. And especially when you see them on the page, one by one, these quick snips of worry and disconnected thoughts he picks up, it really reminded me of being online, looking at social media, specifically looking at Twitter, where everyone and anyone can write down what they're anxious about and broadcast it to the entire world. You are almost literally hearing people's thoughts. I noticed that you don't use Twitter. You have an Instagram account. How do you feel about social media and how we deal with those anxieties now?
I don't use Twitter, not for any reason other than I don't think I could keep up with it. I do find it quite difficult even keeping up with Instagram. But I think Instagram is a sort of a nicer place to be at the moment. That may change. Twitter started off in quite a nice way, but now it's used as a rather venomous and political tool. Mm-hmm. And but anyway, referring back to to the idea that this is an expression of online, if you like, anxiety expressed, that isn't really the case. I started writing this book in 2008, and I think, I'm not sure that I'm right, but it could well be pre-Instagram and maybe even pre-Twitter. It certainly is not pre-Facebook, I know that.
You may have invented Twitter in that page before even a thing.
God help me if I have. But anyway, I foresaw the internet. Many of Who fans will know that. Back in 1971, I wrote a piece called Lifehouse in which I foresaw the internet. I foresaw what we have today, which is that we consume information, and we unfortunately we suffer the consequences of consuming that information. Sometimes it enriches our lives, but sometimes it costs us. And I think there is a karmic consequence to that. And I don't mean in a spiritual sense. I mean that we are impacted by the bad news that we read that shouldn't really impact on us because it's never going to affect us. And what that's done is made us anxious and also made us perhaps a little bit melodramatic about the changes in the world around us. And what the wonderful Greta Thunberg has taught us to do is to stop being melodramatic and just get down to business and do something to fix things. So mm-hmm. In 2008, I wandered around my neighborhood and listened to people. And why did I do that? Well, because the best rock and roll comes from the neighborhood. And I think that's true of hip-hop today. The best hip-hop comes from the neighborhood. You know, Missy Elliott, Kendrick Lamar, they're people from Baltimore. And the music is from the neighborhood, for the neighborhood. And then we as outsiders look in on those neighborhoods and we come to understand them better. And that was what I felt rock was trying to do when I was a young man. So I thought, well, as an older man, what do? I look at my neighborhood and I live in what's probably a bit more like Brooklyn Heights than Harlem. Mm-hmm. And realized that even though everybody was affluent and living well, they were still terrified. They were worried for their children, I think, worried for their future. And I thought, this is what I should write about. But it's taken me 10 years. And in that 10 years, things have really sped up. You know, the whole issue of anxiety and mental illness and the issues about climate change, terrorism, polarization of political groups, internationalists and people on the left, liberals, which is happening in Europe as well as in America. It's all stuff that is come from a vague underlying conversation.
You do get into some of those issues on the new album. I'm talking to Pete Townsend of The Who right now about his novel Age of Anxiety and The Who's new album, Who. The song Ball and Chain You know, you're it's pretty explicitly about a very specific current event, an issue that's really happening. Could you tell me a bit about that song? We're going to play it.
Well, this song was written, unfortunately, for the wonderful President Obama. He promised to shut down Guantanamo, and I'm sad to say that he didn't. So it was, in all other respects, I think he was a fine man, but in that one respect, I just thought, this song's for you, buddy.
Here it is. It's Ball and Chain, talking to Pete Townsend of The Who. It's from their new album, Who. Ball and Chain from Who, the new album from The Who. My name is Raina Duras. This is World Cafe. I am speaking to Pete Townsend. Now, spirituality, it's always played a big role in your work, and it does in your novel, Age of Anxiety. The hallucinations people have, there are characters that converse with angels, and it also sort of applies to the feeling of live performance itself. How, for you, is creativity linked to spirituality?
You know, I don't know that I can make a real connection. I think, as a boomer, I my first understanding was that the religion had not really worked. I sang in a choir when I was a boy. I loved Jesus. I wanted to be a good Christian. My parents were not very devout, but my mother said she was a Christian. And then growing up and becoming a teenager and becoming slightly politicized, like looking at the anti-apartheid issues, the Ban the Bomb movement and that kind of thing, a lot of my friends were took it further and became extreme. They were associated with the extreme left. And I'm talking about the art school crowd, so between the ages of 15 and 18. And, of course, when I became slightly older in 66, 67, psychedelic drugs came along and then the hippie movement. And this emerged to be, in my case, an absolutely counterfeit generation of people, except in one respect, which was that the hippies had a really, really clear spiritual focus. They knew that they didn't know,
right? Yeah,
and I think that the drugs helped in a way. What happened in the hippie movement was that psychedelics led to a group of people who flew off like butterflies, looking everywhere in the world for something that would tell them whether there was a God, if there was a God. If there was a God, what God was for, and if there wasn't a God, how did God or how did the universe happen? Where did it express itself, and how does it function in congregation? And by congregation, of course, I mean in music concerts and in right. gatherings and in festivals. The language, if you like, of that era infused itself into my life. And I, like so many people, I went off looking for a teacher, and I found one in India, a fellow called Meher Baba. Mm-hmm. And he died 2 years after I found him, but I still feel that he's a genuine master, whatever that is. I think he's a genuine one. And unlike many others, his life is morally unimpeachable. So one of his great loves as a man was the Sufi poetry of Hafiz and Rumi.
I'm not sure if I
And he writes about, and so does Hafiz, about the ocean of consciousness. And the fact that there is this ocean, and you might call it the universe, you might call it the you know, open space, you might choose to call it God. that that ocean is made up of drops, and the consciousness that we have as individuals, we are those drops. Now, that poetic idea is a useful, loose fundament to express. You know, one of my best songs as a solo artist was "The Sea Refuses No River." Mm-hmm. The idea that the river of human beings flows into this ocean—it's a pretty cheesy metaphor, but for speaking about spirituality, it's a really good metaphor.
That's "The Sea Refuses No River" by Pete Townsend. I'm Raina Duras, talking to Pete Townsend on the World Cafe today. This is really my last big question for you, because it's something that's going to stick with me personally, and I think it will stick with other people who read it. The line, "Waiting is the black art of creativity, not inspiration. Be ready, be alert, always." So, this is a lesson in the book. I don't want to give anything away here. But obviously you right now, like I said at the beginning of this interview, you have this album coming out. You have a book. It's going to be an opera. It's going to be installation. It is going to be visual art. You're clearly having no short of creativity. And it can be very hard to sit and wait with so many distractions. How do you do that? How do you give yourself the space and the time to wait for that inspiration?
Oh God, it just happens, doesn't it? Before I started on writing the songs for the Who album, which were songs that I wrote for Roger, not for the Who as a brand. I wrote them for Roger because I knew that Roger would sing them best and he would best exemplify the Who model. And that was a tough call. You know, I wrote these songs, and at first he didn't feel that he would be able to sing any of them. And in the end, he did sing all of them. But in order to do that, I took a year-long sabbatical. I'd have been having some counseling, not about creativity, but about other issues, sadness about my childhood and mm-hmm. sadness about what I spoke earlier about realizing that Tommy was very much rooted in my own childhood difficulties and abuses in my childhood and abandonment in my childhood. That I was talking to him about that. It was a retired priest, and he told me, "Oh well, we priests used to have trouble with this. We would have a sabbatical." And I said, "What's that?" And he said, "Well, we would take time off." And I took 3 months off, and I went to work in Singapore or something. And I said, "Right, I'm going to do a sabbatical." And I took a year off. And towards the end of that year, of course, I had been waiting, and then the flow of ideas and the flow of songs all started to happen. I just had to be ready, and I had to be aware. I'd already written those lines, by the way.
You wrote that line before you actually had it come true for you there.
Yeah. I think today, particularly through Instagram, I act very much as a creative mentor. You know, often I'll see young musicians who are very talented or very building their careers or building their skills as musicians or electronic musicians, and see them post something and they might make a comment like, "Well, this is the best I can do today. I quite like it. I know I could do better." And I'll often comment, and they'll kind of go, "Wow, is this you, Pete? And what an honor to be speaking to you." And I'll just cut to the chase and say, "No, listen, you know, you're going in the right direction. I love this stuff." So in a sense, one of the things that I want to do as an artist and a writer is I want what I write to be helpful to creative people. There's a wonderful writer called Julia Cameron, who was once married to Scorsese. They split up after they made a big movie, and she was a drinker and she stopped drinking and her creativity just stopped. So she started to develop a system for herself, which she now markets. It's called the Artist Way. It's a wonderful tool for creative people of all kinds, or people that aren't creative who want to be creative. You know, if you're oh, God, this is such a cliche. So I was going to say a little old lady who wants to learn to paint, but I won't be so patronizing. Let's say a little old lady who wants to learn how to do finger drumming and rap. that this course really helps you do that. It's a wonderful course. And so a lot of my thinking, a lot of the advice that I have the old guy tell to the young guy, the older musician tells the younger musician, is stuff I would like to have had somebody tell me when I was young.
Pete Townsend of The Who, talking about his new novel, Age of Anxiety, and the new album from The Who called Who. Thank you so much for joining me. This has been such a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks, Raina. It's been a pleasure for me, too. I've enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
How cool was that? That was my chat with Pete Townsend of The Who. Thanks again to Pete for stopping by. I'm Raina Duras. Thank you for listening to World Cafe from NPR.